Hey, Sister Brunch family, thank you so much for joining me again to share the stories of another Black woman who is thriving in entertainment and media. I know you'll be so inspired by today's guest, and when you are, go ahead and leave us a nice review on Apple or Spotify, wherever you listen to this podcast, and follow our community on Instagram at Sister Brunch Podcast. This episode is being published in early 2024, and we have some really exciting events happening this year, along with our amazing, powerful guests that you will not want to miss. Instagram is the place to keep up with all that we have happening, so make sure you follow us over there. You can also sign up for our newsletter on our website, sisterbrunch.com, to stay updated. Now, I have a little quick story for you. On November 23rd, and I looked it up, so it was almost exactly to the date that I am recording this episode with our guest. On November 23rd, 2020, I got an email from my best friend Tamika introducing me to a young filmmaker who had just graduated from NYU. I knew from that very first conversation that this was a filmmaker whose projects would align with everything that I believe in around impactful storytelling. And then a couple years later, I receive a crowdfunding email in my inbox. Now, as a development executive, I get a lot of these. And as a person who, you know, is really trying to uplift community, I do get a lot of these. But when I saw this one, I could not click the link to donate fast enough. And I have had the opportunity to meet our guest and see her grow and thrive. We were at the Scout Film Festival together, one of my favorite film festivals, where she won an award that helped her with the film that we'll be talking about, I think, a lot today. And that film has recently gotten to Sundance, and the film is Grace. And I am so very pleased to welcome Natalie Jasmine Harris to Sister Brunch.
Thank you so much for having me. I can't believe it. That was in 2020.
What a journey. And so impressive that it was just that short time ago, and here you are. And you've been really going nonstop since then.
I really have. Graduating into the pandemic didn't stop me.
It really didn't. Right. I'm like, you know, lots of folks have taken breaks as they needed to, but you took that and you kept going with it. And it's amazing. And also, I'm going to put on my auntie hat and say, I hope you're getting lots of rest. And that if you're not after Sundance, because obviously that's going to be very busy, but that you deserve a break and some rest and some nap time and all of that.
Yes, thank you for that. I'm trying to plan some kind of like vacation or something afterwards to like debrief and decompress.
Yeah. I mean, especially because we're recording this in December and Sundance is, of course, in January. And so you're going to be very busy while you're there. And then you're going to get a lot of phone calls as soon as it's done, or even the day that the film screens. So just take permission. Know that you have permission to even tell folks, I'll talk to you in a couple weeks. I'm going to take a little time off. Good. All right. So Natalie, we always start with the filmmaker's journey or our guest's journey for how they ended up here today. So what has been your journey as far back as you want to take us?
Sure. So I'm kind of that annoying person who knew what I wanted to do for a very long time. I knew that I wanted to be a filmmaker, or I knew that I loved, you know, film and photography and just like that medium when I was in high school. Really, honestly, when I was in middle school, but I didn't quite...
How did you get exposed to it? Did you have someone that was doing it in your family or...
No one in my family. The closest thing is that my mom and my grandma both worked in journalism and news. Like my mom and my grandma worked at, I think, like ABC or CBS. Like while they lived in New York, those jobs were accessible and I think paid somewhat well for the time. And so they had experience with like media, But no, nobody really knew anything about photography or filmmaking in my family. I just happened to go to a middle school where it was very, very small, and they gave us like little flip cameras where we could make assignments for school on the flip camera, and we
Oh,
also
nice.
got like MacBook Pros to do our work included, and so we were able to like play with iMovie and use the flip cameras. And so that's kind
Yes.
of, that like for me, that's kind of how I started learning how to edit. The videos I made back then were all pretty cringy and probably awful looking back on it now, but it was fun. I enjoyed like expressing myself and having my friends express themselves, and learning the technology. But when I went to high school, that's really when I knew that I wanted to do filmmaking, and I started off by doing documentaries. I went to a very small boarding school for high school, and I was there during the start of the Black Lives Matter movement. So I was one of only two Black girls in my grade. And I remember just how I felt learning about Trayvon Martin and so many other people who had lost their lives due to police brutality. And no one in my high school either knew or cared, probably both. They didn't care to know what was going on. And I just was so angry and sad, and I felt confused and like helpless, and I didn't really know what to do. Yeah, I just remember feeling really hopeless and confused and frustrated. And so I turned to filmmaking, and I would go to documentaries in DC when I could get away on the weekends from campus, and I'd bring my camcorder with me and just start recording everything that I saw. The people, I interviewed activists, I asked them what was happening and why they were there and why we should care. And I somehow got the courage to play my documentaries in front of our whole school at our morning meetings.
Yes.
And I was really hoping to like wake up all of the white students and to get them to care. It didn't really work in that moment. But I did learn just from that experience, like how powerful filmmaking could be and how storytelling can just help the community. And I posted my videos on YouTube, and they ended up getting a lot of views, like from the community, and people, wanted to see more. So I would go to more protests, or I would, just travel and make documentaries when I was traveling, and just, I started telling more stories on my own. I learned how to edit and film and interview people. So that was really how I got into filmmaking.
I love it. And I want to mention, because you talked about going into DC on the weekends, and that you grew up in Maryland, right?
Maryland.
And that's another unique aspect of your story, because and it's been true for many of our guests who didn't grow up with kind of this immediate access into the industry or immediate access to filmmaking. And I love that. I think I didn't know that your kind of like foray into it was in documentary, but that makes so much sense. And I think it is that's that like root of storytelling is documentary, and the challenge of putting together a story from, sometimes very different places. And so I love knowing that. I love that that was your root.
And you learn so much doing it all on your own. I was directing, I was interviewing, editing, doing the camera. I was doing everything, and I really learned a lot in that experience. And I ended up going to college in DC only for 1 year to do filmmaking, and then I transferred to NYU because I really wanted to be able to learn everything. The school that I was at in DC was more focused on journalism. But I was like, I think I want to write. I think I want to learn, how sets work. And I think I want to learn how to do, more than just documentaries. I wanted to learn just more than documentaries. So I went to NYU, and that's really where I learned, everything that I'm doing now, and where I started to write my own stories and make coming of age stories. And I fell in love with certain filmmakers, and that's really kind of how I got to where I am today, was my experience and everything I learned at NYU.
who are some of your favorite filmmakers? Who were the ones that spoke to you then?
It's always so hard to choose. I really love this French filmmaker, Céline Sciamma. Oh. She did Portrait of a Lady on Fire.
Oh my goodness, yes.
Beautiful, beautiful work.
Yes.
And Barry Jenkins is also one of my favorites. Yeah.
And so I'd love to talk a little bit about Grace. And obviously, I mean, I think it's important to say that then, well, actually, let's start with Pure. Because you, first of all, just you saying, I'm going to go to NYU, that's hard in of itself, right? Very competitive program. Do you feel like it was that work that you had been doing that that was part of what helped you get in? And what was that process like applying to NYU?
It's so interesting because I applied out of high school, like senior year, but I didn't get in. I got rejected when I applied to high school.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And I applied again because I really wanted to go. And also the school that I was at in D.C. had a lot of racial issues. I was there in 2016 during the election, and we had hate crimes on our campus. Like, it was awful. So I needed to leave. I didn't want to stay there for another year. So I was like, you know what? Why not try film school again? So I applied to NYU to transfer, and I ended up getting in.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's really funny that I didn't get in my first time. I think that just shows you I've always been, like, very determined. And I've always
And when they said that no, you were like, "Oh, I'm going to figure this out."
Exactly.
Wow. Okay. Okay. And I like the lesson. I like the lesson that you can apply again, right? That's it's not the end of the world. And there are also, we'll say, other filmmakers who don't necessarily even go to film school, but if you're going to go, NYU is probably a good one to go to and to keep trying to get into.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And it was a sacrifice, you know. At the school that I went to before, I would have had probably like no loans and maybe only like a little bit, like, I don't know, 5,000, like something very small for loans. But I chose to go to NYU, and I remember my mom sitting me down and saying, you know, this is how much this is going to cost. This is how much debt you're going to have. This is how much debt I'm going to have. Are you sure you want to do this? You need to make the most of it. And like having that real conversation with me. And so then when I got to NYU, I remembered that. And I was like, okay, I really need to like step up my game and like commit to being a filmmaker and do everything I can so that I can, you know, make myself proud and my family proud and hopefully make enough money to pay off all of our loans that we took on. So that really helped me kind of go in and like hustle when I was there.
And so was Pure your thesis?
Yes.
Okay. Thesis. Tell us about Pure. Tell us what it's about, why you decided to do it, and what kind of the future holds for Pure.
Yeah. So growing up in Maryland, I was surrounded by a lot of kind of middle, upper class Black families. I have a single mom, so I wasn't quite in that, you know, community. But my mom is really smart and, you know, went to Harvard for grad school and now works really high up in administration at a college. And she's in a sorority and joined a lot of organizations. So a lot of her friends and counterparts, you know, their kids were in Jack and Jill. Or they just did certain, like, you know, Summers on the Vineyard, things
and
like
will
that.
Will you describe Jack and Jill for our listeners?
Ooh, describing Jack and Jill.
You see how I had you do it and not me.
I know. Jack and Jill is, technically, it's a mother's organization.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay.
Yeah. I think it's mostly, like, to bring mothers together and their children, Black mothers together and their children. And oftentimes kids who grow up in predominantly white areas will join Jack and Jill so that they can have a community of other, Black folks. They, you know, they do after school programs and they do trips, they travel. Every year they have a really big holiday party in New York City that I would sometimes go to with some friends who like invited me. It's just like a social organization and they do community service, I think too.
Very fancy.
Yeah, very fancy. Exactly. Yeah.
And
Yeah.
bougie. We can say it.
Very bougie. Yes. Yes. These are all very bougie things.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
Exactly.
Okay. This is Sister Brunch, where we champion the triumphs of Black women and gender expansive people in entertainment and media. Let's pick up where we left off with our remarkable guest, Natalie Jasmine Harris.
So I was never in Jack and Jill, but a lot of my friends and my mom's friends were. So I kind of always just observed like what they were talking about and what they were doing on the weekend or over the summer or Christmas break. And one thing Jack and Jill does is a cotillion ball, which is a ceremony and tradition for a lot of women across cultures, really. It actually started in Europe, and it prepared young girls to enter into womanhood and become young ladies. They learned fine dining and etiquette and ballroom dancing. And it all culminates in this ball where you're introduced to society. At a ceremony, you wear a long white ball gown, you have a male escort who wears a tuxedo, and the two of you walk hand in hand in front of your family and friends. And back in the day, it was a way for families to kind of like arrange their children's marriages. But, you know, we've progressed as a society, so it's not necessarily in that same vein, but a lot of people are set up by their families, you know, to have like a male escort who their family approves of. So it's, you know, it's a very bougie tradition, a very heteronormative tradition. And yeah, and a lot of Black communities have kind of adopted them from this Eurocentric beginning. And it's been a big tradition in like, you know, more well-to-do Black communities, including some parts in Maryland. So I was really intrigued by this tradition. I never did it when I was in high school. I said no, even though my mom and my grandma both did cotillions. I was like, I don't know if that's for me. Because, you know, I was just beginning to figure out my identity and sexuality, and I didn't feel right doing something like that. And, you know, having this guy, you know, become like my boyfriend for this program. And it just wasn't me. So I said no, but my god sister and my best friend did it. And I kind of like watched their experiences and I went to their cotillions. And so when it came time for me to pick a film that I wanted to write for my NYU, like senior thesis class, I was just thinking about cotillion. And I, for me, I love coming of age stories. So I love thinking about youth and growing up and what kinds of things like we all kind of go through that are like universal feelings. And so I thought about the cotillion as a really interesting environment for like coming of age and how, you know, that was part of my experience, even though I didn't do it directly. And I wrote the script about a girl who was queer and had to do cotillion. She had no choice. And her escort for the cotillion was also gay. So I thought, for one, that could be funny, like coming out at cotillion. And I think for me, I watched a lot of movies when I was in high school about people pretending to be couples, and I was thinking about that trope but with two queer people. And so that's kind of, you know, what sparked the idea for me, was thinking about those characters and that environment. So I wrote the script, and that turned into my thesis film. And I shot that short film in November 2019. And shortly after pandemic hit.
Yes.
And I was editing like crazy in the first couple of months of COVID, and I ended up submitting it to film festivals, and it had an enormous run. It went to over 50 film festivals like all across the world. And ultimately through ABFF, the American Black Film Festival, it ended up getting bought by HBO. And so now it's streaming on Max.
Yes.
And I, you know, I never expected that this small NYU film I made when I was a student just before the pandemic to launch my career and like get bought by a streaming platform. So it was really, really incredible.
I love it. And now a feature in the works.
Now feature version of the film is in the works. It's just like a more expanded story that explores the cotillion even more and the characters even more, and also where I grew up in Maryland even more. So yeah, we're
Love it.
working on getting that together and hopefully getting it made sometime soon.
I think, as someone tells me, after Sundance, you're
We'll
gonna be okay.
see. We'll see.
So you mentioned about you kind of this came in a moment, this story came to you in a moment when you were really kind of thinking about your own identity, and that you had been in spaces where you weren't necessarily kind of encouraged to really explore your all of your intersecting identities. But specifically, your storytelling is queer storytelling, right? It is for pure, it is for grace, and a lot of the opportunities now, like you've done things with Without Fest, I think, right?
Yeah, at first.
And so I'd love for you to just talk about what that means. I mean, and then on top of that, being a kind of a young Black queer filmmaker, and what that means in terms of the stories you want to tell, the things the ways that there may be barriers because of it, or challenges because of it, all of what comes with that.
Yeah, that's a big question. I love that though. For me, I do feel a sense of like responsibility to my storytelling and filmmaking. I think, I always have. That's why I started making films, because I felt like a sense of responsibility about, helping my my white classmates know about the world. Now it's definitely shifted. I'm not as interested about educating people, but for me, I really care about trying to help my community like see themselves, see ourselves, especially like the younger version of me, because I know what it feels like to, be in a place where you feel alone, where you're unsure about who you are, and you just feel confused and frustrated and have all these questions. And for me, I sit down sometimes and I'm like, if I could have watched a TV show like Love, Victor when I was in high school, or a movie like, I mean, hopefully like Pure, that really would have changed a lot for me. So that's kind of why I like to tell the stories that I do. And also because I've seen, even for people who are not a part of the community, but I've seen the impact that it can have to just have exposure to like other people's stories and experiences. I remember being at home in 2020 with my mom, and we would watch Pose, and we would both learn a lot and talk a lot about, my mom grew up in New York during that time. And she wasn't allowed to go into the village, and we talked about why, and how all of those, the balls and everything were happening just, like in her backyard, but she didn't really know. So we talked a lot about identity and those experiences. So I think like storytelling can spark important conversations, and people can learn and get empathy. So yeah, that's a big part of why I do what I do. It definitely can be a challenge, especially, it's funny, I think the thing that's been the hardest for me in terms of like all of my intersecting identities and being a filmmaker has been like being young.
Interesting. So, yes.
Yeah, like more so than being Black or queer, and arguably even a woman, although that I think that might be a close second. Has been being young. I'm 25, and I started getting into like labs and getting grants, and even HBO when I was still in my early 20s, like 23, 24.
Yeah.
And I
And everybody else
remember,
was in their 50s and had been doing this
yeah,
for a long time, and we're like, what are you doing here?
exactly
Yeah,
exactly
absolutely. Right.
yeah Yeah, and I would tell people my goals, and they would just kind of like undermine them and be like, "Oh, well, you have so much time, it doesn't matter." And it's like, "Well, no, I'm here next to you, and I want to make my feature, next year, just like you do. Don't tell me I should just wait, So yeah, the ageism
Interesting.
has been a lot. I feel like people haven't always taken me seriously, because of my age.
Yeah. Fools. I'm so glad to know I'm not one of those. Wow. Yeah. Actually, I can see, you know, I mean, this is, it's such a challenging industry, and it is an industry, right? And that makes it even harder, especially when you do impact work, like, you know, that the walking that line between trying to make money and, you know, that accepting that this is a capital minded, you know, business. Mm-hmm. And then also, therefore, you have people who have tried to do it for so long, and for mm-hmm. all the reasons, all the intersecting identity reasons why there have been barriers, mm-hmm. including barriers we put on ourselves. And so I think, yeah, what happens is that they, you know, I'm sure, unfortunately, there's some jealousy, there's some crabs in a barrel mentality, and it's mm-hmm. too bad. Yeah. You know, but my goodness, I mean, we should just be so happy that there's someone else who's making it and forging this path around the kind of storytelling you're doing also, because you are not coming in and necessarily doing kind of the work that's going to get you a lot of money. I'm going to put it in the universe Hopefully. That you will be able to pay off these bills, maybe some commercial work, you know, do some commercials, but,
Or Marvel, you know, I would do a Marvel movie.
Yeah, you would kill a Marvel movie again. And so that's something that I love about your work is that you have been talking. I've had this conversation this season about like being rooted in story first. Mm-hmm. But I was so fortunate that I got to be a little bit of a fly on the wall for your process also, like for Grace. And I'd love to talk about Grace now too, you deciding that you wanted to use a particular film for this movie. And I remember, she putting on a lot of stuff, and you did it. And I'm quite certain that is a big part also of like you making that choice mm-hmm. at your age, when people think that people your age can't make those kinds of decisions. And here mm-hmm. you are being like, absolutely. Hey, it's Fanchen, and you're listening to Sister Brunch. We'll be right back. And during this very quick break, if you haven't done this already, you know what I'm going to ask you to do. Follow us on Instagram. You know, engage with us. Share your stories. Ask us questions. All of that good stuff. So let's talk about your process. So let's talk about Grace and maybe just like, you know, the log line or whatever you want to share. And then also especially for our younger listeners, actually for everybody who wants to know, like, what is the process of making a short that's so brilliant that gets into Sundance?
I don't know if I could say like, how I did it or why I'm always like, so many people are talented, you know, like, why me? Sometimes I fall into that imposter syndrome mentality, but I can get to that after. So for Grace, it's a short film, also a coming of age story, and it follows a young girl named Grace as she prepares for her family tradition of baptism. And she has to get baptized as she turns 16 to, you know, kind of enter in like her religious community and also come of age. And she has to repent for something before she can get baptized, and starts to second guess the feelings she has for her best friend, Louise, that are beginning to feel romantic. And it's a very quiet film. It's also a period piece set in the 50s. So for me, that idea came from thinking about not having too many stories about our queer elders. And I actually have a cousin who I recently found out is gay, and she's, I believe, in her 80s. She had a roommate for a long time, and like no one really knew that they weren't just roommates. Mm. And I was just thinking about her story and thinking about stories my grandma and my great aunt would tell me about growing up and spending the summers at their grandparents' house, picking peaches and plucking chickens and running around the field and just doing all these fun things. And I was thinking about, you know, what that could look like if you were also trying to figure out like your place in the world and your sexuality and falling in love. So the story kind of came from those places. And with it being a period piece, I wanted to shoot on film, on 16 millimeter film. That was the vision that I had.
Yes.
And, it's expensive to shoot on film.
Yes.
Very expensive. So that was a big risk that I had to take to one, make the decision and stick by the decision to shoot on film. But I did, and we found people who were generous enough to help us make that happen. Like one of our EPs, got the film for us, the film stock, the physical rolls for us.
Nice.
And our cinematographer, who's incredible, Tahila De Castro, she's amazing at shooting on film. Like that's really one of her specialties as a DP.
Nice.
So she was able to pull favors for us, to be able to get the film like processed and get a
How
camera, a
did
film
you get
camera.
her on board?
How did I get her on board? So I am a bit of a stalker, not stalker, but I like to
Yes.
watch other short films and other films, period, that I think are great. And I always watch the credits and I'm like, oh, who's this person? Who's that person who shot this? I love the way they did this. And so I have a little folder on my computer where I keep like names or IMDBs and just like profiles of people who I think I'd love to collaborate with one day. And I was looking through all the DPs who I had on there, and I remember Tahila, and so we scheduled a bunch of different interviews with DPs, and me and Tahila just like really hit it off. And she also kind of pitched to me, like she made a deck pitching
Wow.
herself for the project, an idea she had, and that really showed me like initiative and passion and just like caring for the story. And so we ended up picking her, and it was like the best decision ever.
I love it. It's
Thank you.
beautiful. You have some Daughters of the Dust moments in there too.
I do.
When I was asking about the your muses or your favorite films,
I
it's
love Julie
beautiful.
Dash. Yes.
Yes. Yeah.
Thank you.
And I'm sorry, interrupted you. So, okay, so you find your DP, you know you're going to shoot on 16 millimeter, you find this DP who shoots on film. And how are you putting your team together? Like you're who did you have so the was the producer on board prior to having your DP on? Or the
Yeah, we
producers, I
had
should say.
Yeah, we had producers on board before, attaching the crew. Not gonna lie, we had a bit of a struggle figuring out the best team. And after my last film with Pure, I realized sometimes people who want to work with you may not always have the best intentions. Some people might be in it, just for the And it really isn't even fame at this level. Like these are short films, but for the clout or whatever you want to call it. And so they may not be putting in the work necessarily. So it took a lot of like trial and error.
How did you handle that when they weren't doing it?
It was hard. Sometimes having conversations, sometimes honestly not having conversations, and it made me just do more work myself, which is not fair. And like, if I could do it all over again, I would definitely rethink like how I handled certain situations where I wasn't really like getting what I needed as a filmmaker. But it's all a learning experience. Like now I know what to do for the next one and how to handle situations for the next one. So I'm grateful like for the lessons, and at the end of the day, like the film was made and I'm really proud of it. And it really took a village. So
It's an incredible village. I love it's so exciting to me that you are building teams, right? And I think that's something that's really nice about coming out of school and maintaining the relationships that are helpful and not holding on to the one, as you said, and learning how to have those hard conversations or and not taking on all the work for yourself, and knowing what you deserve, knowing the kind of support that you deserve. All right, so you film it. it's ready, you're going into post. Mm-hmm. Then at that point you have to re-up your fundraising efforts, right? Mm-hmm. And was that because you had switched to 16 millimeter and so then all that you had went into that, or was it what kinds of things became expensive or more expensive at that point?
There were a couple different reasons. One, definitely, shooting on film increased our cost. And then we also ended up needing, gosh, I'm like, do you even remember all the things that it was so long ago?
That's what I love too, though, is like once you get over that hump and you're like, you know what, we don't even need to think about those challenges.
I was like, what even happened?
Yeah. Which is fine too. I mean,
yeah. I mean, honestly, I think like the bulk of the funds that we had for our first crowdfunding campaign were just to get through production and like get everything the can. And then we were like, okay, we have X amount of money left. We need to finish the film. So we had to launch one for post-production. Yeah. And, you know, there also like were some challenges the film faced, like legally. I had to hire a lawyer. We had a collaborator who, again, didn't have the best intentions, and we had to terminate some things, and so that was an expense.
I'm so sorry.
And it also involved like some funding that they were giving us earlier in the film, like got taken away, and so we were like, okay, well now we have to raise this again. So there were just a couple of different things that happened in addition to like just needing post-production funds, but also we had like other fees. So it was a bit complicated. That's why it took us almost a year to finish the film, because we shot in October and ended up beginning to edit in the spring, so like April or May. So it took a long time just to like resolve things and you know, get my energy back from shooting, all of those things. So, this film has been a journey. I learned a lot. But now I have a really amazing lawyer. She's the best. Like, literally, she's been in magazines. Like, she's incredible. Shout out to Marcy.
Okay, Marcy. Thank you for the support. Because, you know, if you tell Auntie, she's just going to go beat somebody up. So it's probably better that you ended up with an attorney.
I think I may have told you a little bit in Boston. I was like, there was this person who's not the best. But anyway, it's all good now.
Okay. What are your what's next for you? And then I'll get to our signature Sister Brunch question. But what is next for you? We know Pure, you're working on the feature for that. Anything else?
Yeah, I also just finished a short documentary called Ben and Bloom. So that will be going to festivals soon. That was made through a fellowship program with Outfest and Traverse 32. So that should be hitting the festival circuit next year as well, or technically this year, 2024.
That's right. Yes. great. And, what else?
Yeah. And, you know, one of my goals for next year is to really get as close as I can to making my first feature. So I have a lot of different features in various stages. You know, we have Pure that's already written, trying to get financing. I'm writing a feature version of Grace. I'm also working on a documentary feature idea that I have. And then I have another horror feature that we have a pitch deck for, looking for a co-writer. So I have like four different ideas.
You know, so I'm kind of surprised because none of these have come through my email. So I'm trying to... I'm having a little bit of a lack of understanding here.
Okay,
so
I need to send you some more emails then.
Yes, you do.
I have a couple different ideas.
I am here to support. I hope that's clear. So yes, please send them. Absolutely. Definitely. Yes. Absolutely. Yes. Okay. Our signature Sister Brunch question. So you, Natalie, are sitting down to a Sister Brunch with young Natalie. What are you both eating? What are you both drinking? And what do you tell her?
I love this question so much. because I'm all about the younger version of myself, the inner child, all of it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. You make your films for her.
Yeah. So me now, I'm probably having some chicken and waffles and a mimosa.
Yes.
The younger Natalie is probably having some pancakes with chocolate chips.
I mean, what else is there? How can
Yeah, I
anybody have
know.
anything else than
It's
pancakes? It's chocolate chips. Yes.
the best. And I would tell her to keep going. I would tell her she's loved and she has really important work to do and has to love herself. And I would remind her of how amazing and supportive her friends and family are. Many of them are still in my life now, which is really beautiful to be able to have relationships that have seen me, at such different points in my life, and to lean on community, and to just, be confident about who you are and that one day, everything you went through and like your vulnerability will really pay off and help other people. And just how beautiful that is. And I would give her a hug. And yeah, I'd just be really proud.
I love it. Thank you so much, Natalie Jasmine Harris. We are going to be following you. We're going to be supporting your career. I'm so glad to have you on Sister Brunch.
Thank you so much for having me. I love this podcast.
Thank you, Sister Brunch community, for sharing your reviews, sending us questions, and engaging with us all over the internet. You can read the transcript of every episode and find show notes on our website at sisterbrunch.com. If you love video, you can watch the full video interviews on the Trujillo YouTube channel, youtube.com/Trujillo Media, Trujullo Media. Trujillo stands for truth, justice, and love. Did you know that? It's true. We deeply appreciate your support by subscribing to our podcast, leaving us a great review, and sharing it with your friends, family, colleagues, community, everybody who you think would be interested and wants to hear the stories of these incredible guests we have. Season 5 of Sister Brunch is brought to you by Trujillo Productions. Our show creators are Anya Adams, Christabel Nsiabwati, Brittany Turner, and me, Fanchon Cox. Sister Brunch is a Women Make Movies Production Assistance Program project. The land we record our podcast on is the original land of the Tongva and the Chumash people here in Los Angeles.